Blog Talk Radio.
Now, in its second edition, Carol Dean's popular book, The Art of Film Funding, has 12 new chapters to cover all areas of film financing and how to avoid expensive pitfalls. Learn how to start with an idea and end with a trailer. How to make an ask for money. Create your story structure and your trailer. Legal advice, fair use, successful crowdfunding, how to ask for music rights, and what insurance you can't shoot without. Available on Amazon under Carol Dean and at FromTheHeartProductions.com.
Hi, and welcome to The Art of Film Funding. I'm your co-host, Erica Chan, along with Carol Dean, author of the best-selling book, The Art of Film Funding. Carol is also the founder and president of From the Heart Productions and the host of this show. Leslie Neal has directed, written, and produced several documentaries, but her primary focus is on social justice, specifically within criminal justice reform. Her award-winning film, Road to Return, narrated by Tim Robbins, which aired on PBS, was presented to the United States Congress, prompting a bill authorizing $6 million for prison aftercare. Juvies, narrated by Mark Wahlberg and shown on HBO, toured the world as one of the top 10. And on October 21st, Leslie's film Unlikely Friends will air on Discover at 9 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Carol, Leslie is a fiscal sponsor of From the Heart Productions, and she's won the Roy Dean Grant in 2012, right?
Yes, she did. We're so honored to be the sponsor for Leslie's film. And Leslie, thank you so much for joining us today on the show.
Well, thanks. I'm so happy to be here with you both.
Well, there's so much to cover. We have a lot of questions to ask because you've just got a stellar background, and I know it took a lot of tenacity and courage to make some of these films. So I'd like to...
That's right.
You're right. Go back to the beginning and work up to your current project. So let's start with when you first knew that you would be a documentary filmmaker.
Well, you know, I think it started... Way back as kind of a background cloud. You know, I always knew that I wanted to do something to make a difference, and I was always interested in you know, the study of people. And I had been raised an actress, actually, and had a lot of practice in studying people through that medium. But then went off to get an anthropology degree, and which was certainly the study of man. And you know, realized I didn't have the brain power to go on and do that, really, to get my doctorate. And so I switched and ended up going into radio television production, and you know, got a degree in that. And you know, not knowing I was going to do documentaries, but kind of setting my sights on that. But ended up working in production after college, you know, as a production coordinator and in the television business back in Texas, commercials and films and that kind of thing. And ended up switching again and coming out to Los Angeles to become an actress, going back to what I you know, had really known best. Did that for years. So I now look back and see that there was this long progression towards making documentaries, but it was a circuitous route. You know, it wasn't a straight route. But I can now, you know, it's the nice thing about, you know, being older is you can turn around and see how your life progressed in just the way it was supposed to progress. So eventually, go ahead.
I just wonder, what town in Texas did you live in?
Yeah, Dallas. So I was working in production back in Dallas when I got out of college, you know, commercials and really California productions that were coming in as a production secretary on those, and realized I wanted out of Dallas. So I came out to Los Angeles and became an actress, and was pretty successful, you know, doing that for a while. And and then eventually ended up getting married, and I just kind of stumbled into my first documentary, and that was, you know, Road to Return. I had visited a prison, been invited to come in, and realized somebody should do a film, and so I was looking for people and interviewing people, and, you know, nobody really had the passion, and my husband at the time turned to me and he said, you know, look, you do it. You know, you've got the background. But I didn't feel like I did have the background because I've been working as an actress and I'd never made a film before. So with his encouragement, and, you know, I went to a couple of women filmmakers that I knew that had been very successful and documentarians, and they really kind of mentored me through that first film, you know, and you know, I could always go to them, and I remember going and saying, well, how do I, hire a cameraman? And they said, okay, these are the questions you ask. And I did that first film, and Tim Robbins, you know, narrated it for us. And I just not only fell in love with, you know, making documentaries, but I fell in love with what they could do, that they could really move people to make a change. And then I fell in love with criminal justice reform, and I decided to just kind of stay in that genre for the most part.
Well, thank heavens. That's a great decision because you've made some major inroads. So Road to Return, that was shown in Congress and prompted the bill authorizing $6 million for prison reform. How on earth, you must have been on the phone for months to get that to happen.
No, I wasn't. It was actually the program that I did the film on, and there was a senator at the time that they were working with in Louisiana, Senator Landrieu, and we were just, you know, they were really working that front, and, you know, I had just made a tool. So we all traipsed, you know, to Washington, which was pretty cool, and showed the film and, you know, talked to a bunch of senators at the time, and which just helped push them over the edge to fund the bill. And, you know, the term was aftercare, and nobody really knew what that meant in terms of what it means is helping ex-offenders who come out of prison reintegrate back into society. And, you know, with help, you know, education, job training, you know, whatever, because what people face when they come out is just nearly unsurmountable. So at that time, nobody's really talking about it. And so, you know, I'm proud to say that I think that film, you know, helped throw a little pebble in the pond to create concentric circles that, you know, began people, you know, to have more awareness. Now they call the term reentry. So that term's a little passe, but now they call it, you know, instead of aftercare, they call it reentry. So,
well, Leslie, where did you get most of the money? Did you go for grants or did you go after individual funders?
No, with that first film, I had no experience. So my husband and I at the time funded that film. And, you know, we're doing everything on a low budget and, you know, I'm blessed to have found, you know, talented teams of people who are willing to cut their rates a little bit for me. And, you know, just kind of plugged along. And, you know, I had to learn how to edit and all kinds of things. I was working with an editor eventually. But, you know, I just slowly made it happen. I never did make my money back on that first film, but what I got was awards, you know, recognition, and experience, really, of how you do it. So I don't like to go back and look at that film because I can see a lot of mistakes, but people still buy it.
Oh, this is great. Well, sometimes I've had people call me saying, excuse me, I have $50,000, one young man called.
Yeah.
He said, I can either take this and do 1 year in a college on learning filmmaking, or I can make a film. And
right.
I said, make a film.
Yeah, I think
you could
so.
Do a great film for $50,000.
Right.
A short.
Right. Yeah.
And maybe some of them are doing full features for that now. So he did. But
he did. What happened? Was he able to, like, launch from there? Or?
Yes, so far. I mean,
this
is still... We're launching section, but the film is almost completed. So the point is that sometimes it's just like Nike says, just do it. Get out there and
yeah,
do it,
you know,
right?
You know, I'm asked a lot, you know, how do I get, you know, my films? And, you know, I'm really honest. I was blessed. I had the money. I was able to do it. Not everybody is. And, but, you know, if you, for example, I mean, I had a degree in filmmaking, but I was, you know, I just couldn't get those grants. You know, grants are still hard to get, even though I do have a huge track record now. It's much easier now to get a grant. Than it would, but there's no way I could have gotten a grant that first time out. And I tried. I certainly tried.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about Juvies? How did you find that film?
Well, Juvies, I found I was invited based on Road to Return, the first film, to come in and see a program that was being done in a juvenile hall here in Los Angeles, a writing program, and, you know, just as a guest, because obviously, you know, I was interested in the criminal justice system because of my first film. And I went in and I saw this writing program, and I saw, you know, I was met with a group of boys, 15, 16 years old, who were all headed to state prison, to adult prison. And, you know, I was just shocked. I didn't know that that could happen. But I was so moved by their ability to communicate, articulate their feelings of what they were going through, that certain stereotypes of mine were blown away immediately. You know, these were the kids that we were reading about, drive-by shootings, you know, that we were, those of us here on the west side of Los Angeles were afraid of. And I saw, you know, just how beautiful they were and their humanity and how they were really being railroaded. So I thought, gosh, what a, you know, what a great tool they're using it with writing. I'd love to do that with cameras. So I wanted to come in and do a workshop with cameras, teaching them how to communicate by telling their stories through video. And so I basically was petitioning Juvenile Hall for well over a year. And it was, you know, so I think they finally gave me a room just because I wouldn't go away. They were so tired of me coming around. And that's one of the first things I'll tell people. You know, I get asked a lot, how do you get access? How do you do what you do? And I say, I just don't go away.
Right.
You know, you just keep at it. And so anyway, I got my first class. I did not go in to do a documentary. I just went in to, you know, basically volunteer and teach them how to use the tools. And when I started the class, I quickly realized, oh, my God, what's happening? You know, I really didn't know about trying juveniles as adults. I knew something about the adult system. I didn't know anything about the juvenile system. So about 3 months into that class, I went, whoa. The stories that they were telling were so powerful, and they were so honest in communicating with one another that I thought, wow, there's a film here. And so we had put together a little trailer, and you know, we were showing it around probation and juvenile hall, and we got shut down. I said, you can't do this. And I said, why? And they said, well, and then they named all these things about, you know, juveniles and cameras and blah, 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 and even if it was just for internal use. So, again, I had to petition and wait around for about another year, year and a half maybe, to get the rights to really go in and do something. But at the same time, I kept teaching. So that's
What were you teaching?
Well, I was teaching video production skills to these kids.
Oh,
yeah.
Great.
I was teaching them how to communicate via video. And so they were interviewing each other on their stories, you know, like what happened to me, where I come from, et cetera, et cetera. And so that's when I realized, my God, there's something here. You know, we should do a documentary. I got shut down. I just didn't go away. Finally got the rights to do something. Very, very, very difficult to work with juveniles in front of cameras because there are lots of laws against it. It's, you know, I always say it's so easy to send a kid to adult state prison but don't dare try to photograph them.
Wow.
Yeah. So anyway, I mean, it just took a long time. Juvies took a very long time to make. And, you know, and ended up following for 5 years, 12 kids. worked with a lot, taught a lot more, but I focused in on 12. So that was Juvie's.
And did you get any grants for filmmaking, or how did you get the funding for this one?
For Juvie's, again, I self-funded. You know, I was certainly trying to pre-sell it. You know, HBO was looking at it. They kept saying, oh, I love what you're doing. Keep going, which they're notorious for. And I'm trying to think. I had a couple of very small grants on Juvie's, very small grants. So I did have, you know, kind of cobbled together. But again, was using most of my own money to front load that, which has pretty much been my history. Because I couldn't get grants to totally finish everything. And then what I did was I ended up, you know, selling, you know, making them and then selling them on the back end, you know, after I finished them.
Well, yes,
and I've been really lucky. Huh?
Who bought Juvie's?
HBO ended up buying Juvie's.
Oh, that's wonderful.
I would have preferred that they give me the money on the front end to make it, but they did. They did buy it.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
And how
so
are
I've
they
been
to
really
work
lucky.
With?
Pardon me?
Did you enjoy working with HBO on that sale?
I thought HBO
sale?
Was great. Yeah, I loved working with them. But they were great to work with. They didn't. They took my cut. They didn't change a word of the film. They took every. You know. So that was amazing. Mm.
That's fantastic, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, tell me more about Juvie's was screened at the United Nations. So how did,
right.
Tell us more about that.
Well, this was very early on in the whole juvenile justice movement. Nobody, at the time I was making Juvie's, you know, I would tell people what, you know, we were doing, and they'd go, huh, really? You want to make a film about kids who commit crime? I mean, nobody was interested, Carol. And and we kept saying, no, this is a huge war against kids. And we were trying to not only make a film, but use the film to create a movement. So we were looking at how could we have a rock concert, how could we get more interest. And I was assembling teams of people to come in and help with that effort. And there was a woman, Cynthia Ong, at the time who came on to help. And she had connections with the United Nations via another connection of hers. And we just were petitioning them and, you know, saying, hey, you really need to have a conference. This is what's happening across the United States of America. Nobody's aware of it. I mean, there are kids as young as 14 going to adult prison.
Oh, no.
And, yeah. So we were trying to get awareness in our country, you know. And, you know, we had still not signed the United Nations Act on, I forget what it was called, resolution or for children. We were one of the only countries that hadn't signed it. So at the time, the United Nations, quite frankly, wasn't very interested. But we just kept at it, and finally they let us, you know, they organized the first conference, and that was quite exciting. It was really exciting. And now it's something that they have every year in Geneva.
That's
a conference
wonderful.
On juvenile justice. Yeah. So, you know, maybe Juvie's was right at the beginning, the pinnacle, now it's just it's beautiful to see how many people are involved. We've got legislation. California, there's some major legislation that was just passed. So you know, it's a snowball, and it's rolling. And people often look at me as an activist, and I guess I could be labeled as an activist, but what I really like to do is tell other people's stories because, you know, they're the ones living it. And I haven't lived this stuff, but their stories are powerful. So I like to say, look, I'm just creating a tool. Please, you as activists, you as change makers, take the tool and run with it. And that's really how I look at myself, more as a filmmaker than an activist. I'll make the tool. Everybody on the front lines who's really doing the real work, you know, I just hope it helps them.
Well, obviously it has. This is wonderful. I know that when I was opening my grants and reviewing them for the Roy Dean Grant, and I started reading your film, Unlikely Friends, I just sat there and cried. I could not believe the forgiveness of part of the film, and what a wonderful energy the whole concept has. It's just sort of moving everything up to a higher vibration to forgive. So let you tell us about the film. Picture us the film, Unlikely Friends.
Thanks, Carol. Well, I have to say, you know, it's a reflection of where you are, you know, in terms of that you really resonate with you resonated with the film very, very early on. Unlikely Friends is about victims of very brutal crimes who not only forgive their perpetrator, but they actually become friends with them. What they do is they reach out to connect with their perpetrator, oftentimes to get answers, you know, why me, what happened. And through that human connection, they see that they're more alike than they're unalike. And they end up, you know, forgiving, they end up becoming friends. So, you know, that's the basis of the film. Mike Farrell narrates that one for me. He's an amazing humanitarian in his own right. And I'm really asking the question in the film, can forgiveness have an effect in the criminal justice system? Is there room for forgiveness in the criminal justice system? So that's the basis of the film. I was very nervous to make this film because I haven't been asked to forgive on this magnitude, and yet, you know, I'm proposing that there's a power there that could help shift the very dysfunctional nature of us against us versus them culture that lives in our criminal justice system. And I'm thrilled that people are really, really resonating with it. I'm just I think it's a sign that certain things are starting to shift, because these are not easy crimes to forgive at all. And so,
well, I was smitten when the policeman said I had to forgive him to heal myself. That was, to me, the turning point, because that's what it's all about. It's not about, I mean, when someone does something to you, even in the slightest, way that hurts you or affects you emotionally, even without physical stuff, many times people carry this anger and hatred against that person for hurting them. Yet the person goes on without realizing it doesn't hurt the person. It hurts you because you're the one dealing with that emotion. And that's the energy. And anything that drains your energy prevents you from having a full life, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So this is what the policeman found when he was carrying all this anger against the man who shot him. And he lost his eye, and he has trouble walking, and he was just in so much pain every day, and he realized that he had to forgive the perpetrator in order to start healing himself. That is a momentous shift in consciousness, don't you think?
I do, and all the victim survivors that I've interviewed, and I interviewed far more than are in the film, everybody says that. That's the bottom line for everybody, is I didn't do this for anybody but me. You know, that they forgave, that it was a selfish act. And Azeem Kamisa, who's in the film, is a forgiveness expert. He says that the Dalai Lama says that forgiveness is the actual highest vibration that there is, even more higher vibration than love.
Ask you a question about that? You know, when we approach the idea of forgiveness, it can be unique, I would imagine, for everyone, how that looks, you know, what that looks like. But there are some people who really want to do that, and they're not quite sure how to approach it and what pathway to go. And I was wondering if your film touches on that.
On forgiveness being unique for each individual person?
Right, and perhaps a pathway to how that can occur.
No, we don't really talk about the forgiveness steps. There's many different approaches. There's many different groups, workshops. We do have Dr. Fred Luskin in the film as a forgiveness expert. He teaches it. Azeem Kamisa is in there. He teaches forgiveness. And it's not a film on forgiveness per se. That's part of it. It's specifically saying how can forgiveness affect positive change within the criminal justice system, which is a pretty audacious question.
I see. And then you offer the resources for people.
Yeah, yeah. You can go to my website. There's a lot, which is unlikelyfriendsforgive.com. There's a lot of resources listed there. There have been great films on forgiveness. There's also been great films on restorative justice. So as a filmmaker, I looked at those films, and I said, okay, what hasn't been done? What's missing? And that's how I came up with, let's talk about stories of ultimate forgiveness. You don't just forgive, you actually become friends, right? Mm-hmm. So that we can begin to tell a different part of the story. So, you know, since we're talking to filmmakers, that's one thing I look at. You know, I don't want to go make another film that's been out there. What else hasn't been told out of that story? So there's
right.
some excellent films on forgiveness. There's some excellent films on restorative justice, which is where it's putting victim and perpetrator together for the purpose of getting questions answered and for healing. Now, forgiveness doesn't have to be part of restorative justice in order for restorative justice to work. So I was looking at a kind of a combination. And really, what's the hook? What's going to be different? Why are people going to watch my film? Well,
right.
because these are amazing stories. So, you know, you want to look at them. What's out there in the marketplace? What hasn't been out there in the marketplace? I think a lot of times, especially us documentary filmmakers, because we get really passionate about a story or we get really passionate about a subject, but we really go out there and we're just recreating the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we think, well, we're going to be different, but, which, you know, maybe you are. You know, I personally don't think I'm that great a filmmaker to be that different. But what I am going to look at is how can I, what slice can I go through that hasn't been done yet? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yes, very much so.
Well, Leslie, tell us how you found these stories. I mean, how did you find the essence of this film?
Well, you know, I got the idea really basically from when I did my very, very first film, you know, 16, 18 years ago. And it was the bank robber in that film. When he had come out of prison, he was telling me a story how he had gone back to the bank that he robbed to apologize.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and, you know, wouldn't we have loved to have that on film? But he would tell me how the bank teller whom he had held the gun to said to him, you know, with tears rolling down her face, thank you so much for coming back because I haven't been able to let you go for 12 years.
Wow.
I went, wow, that's brilliant. And I immediately knew the impact on him as the perpetrator and on her as the victim, that they had just healed both of each other. And I was talking to people that know a lot more than I do, and they said, oh, well, that's restorative justice. Really not in our country yet much. Coming out of, you know, Canada via New Zealand, via, you know, tribal society. Now, since all those years, 18 years ago, we've seen that movement grow in our country. It's just now taking hold. We're just really at the precipice where it's, you know, it's kind of popping up like popcorn all over the place. Which is cool. It's great timing for Unlikely Friends. But I always wanted to go back to that and do a film on that. And so I made six more films after I did Road to Return. And when I finished my last film, Juvies, I was like, okay, I'm ready to go back. And I'm very well connected now in that world of, you know, prisons. And I began to talk to, again, people who are on the front lines of making change, and they said, wow, there are some amazing stories. And so Lisa Ray of Restorative Justice International introduced me to Steve Watt, and he's the police officer or the Wyoming State Trooper in the film. So he was my very first, you know, contact And then from that, I spent a couple of years finding more stories, you know, and you just get on the phone. You read newspapers, you read books, you get on the phone, and one person introduces you to somebody else who introduces you to somebody else, and that's how I got everybody. And I spend a lot of time nurturing relationships, building the trust between people I work with. And like I said, there are many more stories that I found that I could tell. But everybody who ends up being in the film, you know, their story shares is saying a different component than somebody else's.
Right.
So, yeah. So they'll you know, and can I get in? What's the access? You know, sometimes I'll be following a story, but I can't get access, can't get anything on the story, so I can't tell it.
Yes, I understand that. Well, there
yeah.
must have been a lot of miracles that happened while you were making this. Tell us some of them.
Well, you know, I guess the first miracle is, you know, I finished the damn thing. That's a miracle. But I, you know, really, whenever you get into prison, you get access. That's a miracle. It's very, very difficult to penetrate these cultures. So, you know, in a lot, you know, I certainly wanted in more places than I got in. And I might be, you know, following a story, and I couldn't get in. I couldn't get what I needed. So, mm-hmm. you know, I'd have to let go. So when I, you know, got into, like, say, Florida, which is where, or San Quentin, which is where a lot of the B-roll footage is coming from, those two prisons. And, you know, it's like, great, and they're giving me free rein and access, and I get to be there all day, and they're trusting me, and, you know, that's pretty, pretty awesome. And certainly when I got sponsored by From the Heart, that was a miracle, too. So.
Oh, how kind.
It was. And then, you know, selling it to Discovery, you know, to, you know, it's going to, you know, it's going to have its national broadcast October 21st, 7 p.m. on Discovery, Investigation Discovery, the Discovery Channel Network. I mean, that's a miracle. I think this film is very controversial. I think it's very forward. You know, that they picked it up before, you know, they were just the first people. I didn't even do the festival circuit, and they picked it up.
Did you send it to them, a screener? Did you send to them, or how did
yeah,
it happen?
Yeah, you know, I was working with an associate producer with me, another great filmmaker in her own right, Olivia Klaus, and she had worked with Discovery before, so, you know, we were able to just go directly to them. You know, it's the landscape has changed so much, you guys, from when I started making documentaries to now. I mean, you really, it's hard to get to any of these networks or these venues without an agent.
Oh, really?
Oh, very much so, yeah. Yeah. On almost everybody now, you need to be going through an agent or at least a lawyer. And it didn't used to be the way. You used to be able to pick up the phone and say, can I talk to acquisitions, please? And they tell them what you have, and like, okay, send me a trailer, send me a, you know, a copy. It's
uh-huh.
not that way anymore. So I was lucky I didn't have to go through an agent.
Right.
And I was just, yeah. But, you know, on another film, I'm probably going to have one.
You know. So that would mean deciding early on if you want to work with a lawyer to get you in, or
right.
how do you find an agent for documentaries? What's that process?
I don't really know, except to say, you know, pick up the phone and call your friends or use the different, you know, blog platforms that are out there to ask. If you have a lawyer, ask your lawyer. Again, it's like anything in this town. It's you know, kind of, and I guess like any other business, too, you know, it's connections and asking people. I would hope it's going to be a little easier for me now because, you know, I've sold shows to broadcasters.
Right.
But I don't know. It's also, you know, with it, kind of the, I guess, what was my metaphor, the double-edged sword, you know, of our media platforms being much more accessible now, you know, with digital. You know, we've got so many, it's just, it's made filmmaking so much more accessible to everybody. But at the same time, the competition is that much more fierce. And so that, I think that's forced a big change into where we now have to have agents, because they're weeding out, you know, they're weeding out really, you know, who's able to produce a film and make a good story as opposed to who's just, you know, starting out for the first time. So, that, I mean, that's what's been explained to me by producers, reps, and whatnot, that, you know, that we have such a plethora of people who now are able to make a film and great storytellers. We now, it's become harder and harder in a way to reach those broadcasters. But then, you know, other venues are opening up. I mean, kind of cable is really having to look at itself because of the whole digital download platforms of Netflix and others.
Yes, and Cinedigm is out there. They're really breaking new the way. Did you even look at them as a possible way to show your film?
No, I just went, you know, again, I had trepidation about what I was really asking in this film. And I was asking, you know, basically for the public to look at, can we forgive somebody who's committed an unforgivable act? Can we do that? And so it's, I always thought it was rather audacious of me not to have experienced that myself and to be proposing that as a big question. And so I was nervous about whether the public was receptive. I mean, I will say this, from when I started the film, so it took me several years because, A, I work very slowly because I'm generally using a lot of my own money, and I just work slowly. From when I started the film to when I finished the film, I saw a huge shift in consciousness, huge, where people were not receptive at the beginning when they, again, kind of like Juvies, when I was making that film and starting, people were like, yeah, really, kids who commit crime? I would tell people, you know, well, I'm making a film about, you know, victims of, you know, brutal crime, you know, forgiving the perpetrators and actually becoming friends with them. And people, you could see their faces. It was just like, what? And now there's such a change. I mean, you know, there's interest, articles. I mean, people are, their hearts are opening. And I think there's something happening in the larger culture. Maybe we're tired. Maybe it's, you know, fatigue from the rampant violence we hear about all the time and experience. And like, you know, what's the last straw? Maybe we have to do this. You know, nothing else is working. I don't know. But there's a shift.
Definitely is. I can tell you that. I can feel that.
Can you too? Yeah.
Definitely. Well, we're talking about things that 10 years ago we couldn't have said these things without being considered a little weird.
Right. Exactly. Right.
This would be a hush-hush conversation in a small coffee shop.
Yeah. And so to be able to take that idea, whatever, and actually have a network like Discovery buy it out the gate, you know, was huge. But I was like, what? So I was really pleased.
Oh, you should be. Oh, I'm so glad you've got your screening. 7 p.m. Discovery Investigation on the 21st.
Yeah, it's Investigation Discovery, which is a channel on the Discovery Network. So if you get Discovery, you'll get Investigation Discovery. And it's going to be on the 21st. I just got word that they're going to be rerunning it on November the 4th. I'm not sure what that time is. Probably the same time.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Rerunning in November. Oh, that'll be great. Well, we'll definitely watch that. So,
please. Yeah, thank you.
How long does Discovery have the rights to this film?
They have it for 3 years with a one-year option.
All right. What about
Which is pretty standard.
No,
I'm going off. I'll be at MIPDoc in April to sell it to Foreign.
Great.
Yeah, so, you know, they just bought it for the United States, so everything else is wide open.
Oh, yes. And Canada, Australia, New
Canada.
Zealand.
Right.
They're going
right.
to love
it. Thanks.
Japan
I hope
would
so.
Like. Yeah, that's fun.
So well, yeah, I'm looking forward to that, and you know, of course, we'll be selling the DVDs through the website, and we're already using it at the grassroots level with community screenings from churches to prisons to community organizations. You know, people are already using the film.
Well,
Lefty,
how
I'd like
handling
to
handling
I'm sorry, what?
I'm sorry,
Carol,
go ahead.
Things for you.
I'm sorry, what, Carol?
Who's handling the community screenings, the outreach for you?
My associate producer, Olivia Klaus, she organizes those for me. So on our website, you know, if you're interested, you contact her, and she kind of sets you up.
That's wonderful. So she's not reaching out to schools or communities?
Not at this, no. It's just kind of word of mouth at this point, you know. We have partners listed on our website, and they share the film with their networks and their lists. So we're trying to build the audience that way.
Through your strategic partners.
Exactly.
Right. This is one thing I'm really working with filmmakers about, because they cannot just make the film and expect to go sell it somewhere without getting it to the people that need it. I mean, that's what they
right.
are really making it for, and it's just another part of the filmmaking process. I know it's labor-intensive, but it is early on, I think, you should connect with strategic partners and have them follow you while you're making the film so that they're there to support you at the end by getting...
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. I mean, it's really important, especially if you do a film that has some kind of a message or an action attached. I had to write something for a blog. I was asked, and I looked at, you know, Lisa, who works with me here in the office, and I said, oh, my gosh, you know, filmmakers just don't know that the making of the film is really the fun part. Because... The other, you're going to spend 3 to 4 times more work on writing, so you better be able to write, you know, which I write very reluctantly, and I'm always forced to have to write. But you're going to do a lot of writing and just organizing, and there's so much work involved in rolling a film out.
Leslie, I'd like to ask, I know you're on Facebook, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
How can people find you on Facebook?
Thanks. Our Facebook is unlikelyfriendsforgive.com. Now, that's our website. It's just Unlikely Friends, I think.
Okay. Great.
Yeah.
Great. And you're on Twitter as well?
Yep. And that's UF Forgive, I believe. Capital U, capital F, Forgive is our Twitter.
Okay, great.
Mm-hmm.
Great, because I know that you.
Yeah,
really
and
put
our
a lot
and
of
our
work
Facebook
into
is Unlikely
well.
Friends. Forgive. I'm sorry. What?
I know you put a lot of work into that as well to help promote your films.
Well, you know, I was new to the whole social media platform, and I'm you know still probably a little more old school than I should be, but I think it's totally, completely necessary. And if you don't know how to do it, work with somebody who does to get you up there, because you have to. You have to. So yeah, you can certainly go to our Facebook page, and you'll get, you know, all the information about where I'm speaking next, where we're screening next, what's going on. Other people within the whole forgiveness movement are chiming in. So.
Well,
I know that there will be some listeners who will want to follow you on
please follow
Facebook.
Us, yeah.
Yes.
Please, and
okay.
like our page.
Oh, yes.
Well, do you have a new film chosen?
You know, again, you know, there's probably about a year's worth of work, even though this one is sold and it's already placed, but there's to really help, you know, create that snowball effect. There's about a year's worth of work on this. But in the meantime, I am researching another project and not discussing it this time, but I have already written a grant proposal for it, and we're waiting to hear so whether we get some money to go out and do a trailer for it or not.
Great.
Yeah, so we'll see. If I get it, then I'll begin talking about it. Oh, and I just checked. It is Unlikely Friends is our Facebook page.
Okay. Great.
Yeah.
Unlikely Friends.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll all go there and like it. And
yeah.
We hope when you are ready to go live with your new film that you'll come back and discuss that with us so we can get started following you from the beginning.
Always, always. Always
right.
Here. I'd love to share it with you guys.
Okay, this is such an informative show. Thank you very much for your time, and thank you for what you're doing to raise the consciousness of the planet on the criminal system that we have in the United States, because it does need a lot of repair.
Oh, thank you, Carol. Thank you, Claire, for inviting me. I'm just so happy. I think it's so great what you're doing with this radio show. You know, to for other filmmakers to chime in and listen, and so that we can all learn from each other.
That's what it's all about, isn't it? It's
yeah.
important. Well, thank you and good luck, and we'll all be watching on Discovery.
Yeah, the 21st. Thank you, guys.
Okay.
All right. Bye. Have a great day.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
Thank you. Bye.
I want to remind our listeners that David Raiklin is a brilliant and talented award-winning musician who scores films and can compose music for a trio or for a full orchestra. David is a very good friend to the independent filmmaker and comes highly recommended by From the Heart Productions. If you need music to help tell your story, please contact him at davidraiklin.com. That's David, RAIKLEN.com. And Carol and I want to thank you for tuning in to The Art of Film Funding. Please visit our website at FromTheHeartProductions.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. Good luck with your films, everyone.